coming to you live from Fred's apartment in downtown Raleigh, North Carolina. It's another episode of Album Swap.
And welcome, episode 13. Some people call it lucky, some people call it not. We're going to call it episode 13. Album Swap. I'm Fred Dees Jr. This is my partner, my compadre, brother in arms, Brian McDonald. Give a little shout out, Brian.
Hello.
We are here to swap albums. That's what we do. We have a gentleman from an older generation, a gentleman from a younger generation. We swap albums that we like for different reasons. We tell you why. We give you a little background. And we give you a couple little pieces that we like about the album. And then we like to give a score at the end. This week, episode 13, we have a couple albums that we're both excited about, as we tend to be. Brian, why don't you go ahead and lead off and tell me the album that you, or at least tell the audience the album that you swapped me.
So I gave you Donald Fagen's classic, The Nightfly, came out in 1982.
Classic, understatement is the word.
It's a hidden treasure.
Hidden treasure.
Hidden treasure.
It's a good way to put it. It is.
Yeah, it's an album I've listened to since it first came out. I remember when it was getting radio airplay. It was on MTV with the videos and the kind of really cool, just a total coolness around this album.
And I knew nothing about it, so I'll jump in here. I feel like I teased it in a way I shouldn't have. I didn't know nothing about this album when you gave it to me. So.
Yeah, and I figured that much. Like
nothing about it.
I knew you would know who the musicians were.
Knew he was Steely Dan.
Because he was from Steely Dan.
But that's that.
And that's that, yeah. And it really was, I think, one of those, if you're a big Steely Dan fan, and especially when it came out, they were still pretty popular. This album had just a fantastic sound all around. Just enjoyed listening to it from the first time I dropped the needle on it. My brother was a big Steely Dan fan too, so he had it and we listened to it a lot together. Another fun fact about why I picked this, it came out on my 15th birthday.
Oh, you mentioned that earlier. Fun fact alert.
October 1, 1982.
So. You know what I was doing in 1982?
You weren't around.
Nothing. It wasn't even a thought.
But see, some of us were out there finding hidden gems.
Well, Clemson,
of the older generation.
Clemson football is also national champion.
Actually, I would admit, Clemson football is reigning national champion.
No, like we are sitting right now. No big deal. I love how we can just slide in those fun facts.
What's
about,
the span of years, though, between those?
It's like, 27? Is that 25? Whatever. You know what? It doesn't matter. That's what. Forget the number. It's irrelevant.
Cool.
Yeah, no, but those are great. When that album came out, as is right now when we're recording this episode, Clemson football national champions. There you go. And as an Alabama fan, you have to be pumped about that.
Yeah, I'm pumped, and I'm pumped about, I think the 5 or 6 that we won in between that
time. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so we're straying away. Donald. So, The Nightfly.
Nightfly, Donald Fagen. His first solo album.
15th birthday.
And this is one of those, actually, I think when we first started talking about this, I had this like on the short list. So.
Oh, interesting.
Just whipped it out.
So and I've kind of known about this hidden shortlist with you. Like I said on the last episode, when Primus finally came, it was like episode 12. So these things are interesting to me. So this is fun now that we're getting.
I didn't even want to release them this early. I'll be honest. I kind of wanted to wait, and I thought, but I haven't had time to go back through my CDs and music collection and add to that list. A lot of times I think of it while I'm driving down the road, and I'm like, crap, I got to record it real quick.
And you don't want to write it down because it's dangerous.
Dangerous.
Yeah. Dangerous. There you go. Well, okay, so Donald Fagen, The Nightfly is what you gave me. I gave you Sheer Mag, incredible first new album. I hope you liked it.
Loved it.
Did you?
Fantastic album.
Did you?
Sheer Mag, great name, great band.
Right? Isn't it just like a killer name for a band these days? Like, you just don't get that anymore, you know?
You don't. Really influential. Like, all the influences that they kind of have a sound around.
For sure.
I love.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. So, I had heard of Sheer Mag. A year or two ago, they had, like, a single that came out. And off the top of my head, I can't think of the song. I'm sure it'll come up later. But I wasn't really into it. So, it's kind of irrelevant. Like, I wasn't really into the song. Like, just their sound for that one, I wasn't too keen on. So, when this album came out, this summer, I was routinely on Pitchfork, especially on Fridays, checking out the new releases and stuff. And a lot of good. I listened to so many like new albums this summer. And Sheer Mag came out with Need to Feel Your Love, which is the album that I swapped you. But before that, around the same time, like King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, who I swapped to you a couple episodes ago, they had a new record. Heim, who is... Those are my girls. gave you that record. They came out with a new album, which is awesome. Jason Isbell, who I love, came out with a new record. Broken Social Scene came out with a record. St. Vincent recently, Arcade Fire, We're on Drugs, Randy Newman, like so many good records.
That's right.
Well, that's the thing. So I listen to all these new records, and the one, without a doubt, that stood out to me as my favorite was Sheer Mag, Need to Feel Your Love.
Well, that's awesome.
And it wasn't even close. It's one of those things, like, you listen to the record, her voice hits you immediately. And it's like the effect, it's almost like she's speaking through like a loudspeaker, right? Like, that's what hits you first. But once you really start listening to them, they have like a garage band quality, but it's the actual like musical, like accomplishmentness, you know, that's not even a real word, but like what they actually can do is so much higher than like a garage band that it is, once you get into their music, it's so impressive. So that was like her voice is what's kind of grabs you, but then you start listening to what they do behind her and you're like, this is a ridiculously good band. And every single thing they do feels so genuine. It feels so authentic. They're not trying to be anything other than what they feel when they sing or they play an instrument. You know what I mean? And I love what they do. Their name, Sheer Mag, says it all. So I have been, like you said, I've been holding on to this since I listened to it. And I've kind of had it, I've had it set up. So really excited about this episode. Really excited to share it to you. We're going to take a little break. We're hopping. This is, again, episode 2 of our new format. We're going to do things a little different. We'll have a couple formats. The next one we're going to do, we're going to give backgrounds. Each will give background to the album that we've got. And then after that, we'll got a couple more shorter, digestible formats that we'll get to. But until then, see y'all in a bit.
You're listening to Album Swap, and we'll be right back.
And we are back. Segment 2, episode 13. This is where we give y'all a little background behind each album that we had been swapped. So with that said, Brian, why don't you go ahead and lead off. Give us a little background on Sheer Mag's album, Need to Feel Your Love.
All right, so Sheer Mag, Need to Feel Your Love, came out this year, 2017.
This summer, Nice little summer release.
Little summer easy listening.
Oh, yeah.
It came out on Revolver Records. This band formed in 2014 out of Philadelphia. They had released several EPs, very kind of punk rock way to do it, putting together just short compilations. Don't worry about a whole album. Just get the music out.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If you go look at them on Spotify, that's what you get. Like short, small little compilations of tracks that they have done over the last couple of years. And that was how I knew of them before this record, was they had done one track that kind of like caught some attention from people. And that was, it was like, you know, that was like the one little moment kind of. But yeah, that's how they started. Very punk rockish. There you go.
Very punk rock.
Very, very, very your style, bro.
Yeah, I dig it. So they have a 70s rock with kind of a punk fuzz, was one of the interesting ways I was reading it, looking through the reviews of the album.
Definite fuzz there.
Rolling Stone named them as one of the 10 new artists you need to know, and I would agree with that. I'm not a big fan of Rolling Stone's list all the time, but they're definitely got a great sound and energy to the music that really grabs you. The quote I did, like they said, is a gang of punks with a not-so-secret love of 70s classic rock.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's the thing is, when you listen to them, you get the obvious, not necessarily new, but modern things they're doing to kind of grab you. But there's so many elements of, like, not specifically classic rock, but like the old guys. You know what I mean? Kind of Kiss, maybe a little Zeppelin. You know, you get a little bit of those shades of that, those classic legends.
Yeah, so this band, like we said, they're out of Philly, but they originally are from New York. So it started with two brothers, Kyle and Hart Seeley, who grew up playing bass and guitar. They grew up in Syracuse in the late 90s, early 2000s. The one brother, Kyle, was like kind of into metal, punk, and hardcore. The other brother, Hart, was kind of like more into new metal, more like Tool.
I
love Tool, and Maynard's, I love metal, punk, and hardcore, so I definitely like where they got their sound from. So they both kind of learned guitar, bass, and drums, and they were jamming out growing up as kids, playing in high school bands, battle the bands, those type of things. They went to SUNY Purchase, which I actually had to look up today to see where Purchase is. It's actually right there on the Connecticut line.
Right, yeah.
Just above New Rochelle.
A little geography test there.
A little geography test. Fun fact, it's very close to Connecticut.
Study your maps, kids.
And then they said they had like a Fugazi band. They said it was a Fugazi at the drive-in type band, and I don't know what that, I guess, based off that song. But anyway, they met the singer, Tina Halliday, and the bassist and their main lyricist, Matt Palmer, at SUNY Purchase.
Which is a school, right?
It's a school.
SUNY.
Yeah, it's one of the...
SUNY are all in caps.
State University of New York.
There you go.
And actually, I saw it still said that it's called Purchase College, but it has the State University.
Gotcha. It's a part of
the
network.
Don't know if it's correct to say SUNY Purchase
or
Purchase College.
Yeah, well, we're from the South, so we wouldn't know that. Yeah. But it's part of the SUNY network.
Well,
so
I asked my wife, who's a SUNY grad, but she didn't go to Purchase. She went to Oneonta.
So our inside source wasn't as helpful.
She had no knowledge of the correct reference.
Oh, well.
Anyway.
We know what it is.
So these two brothers, they've definitely got a very strong political view. And part of that stems from their father was actually a reporter and writer. His name was Hart as well. And he wrote books on political figures and kind of put it in poetic verse. And so he did like Trump's The Art of the Deal, Donald Rumsfeld, and others.
It's easy to see where they get some inspiration, really.
Yeah, and
that's cool.
One of the cool things I thought was, so the brothers in college made up this band that didn't exist, like the 70s band that never made it, and they had like 20 albums, and they were called the D-Licks. He said that the last surviving member of the band was like his uncle, and like on his deathbed, he says to him, like, oh, I've got all the tapes, and you need to take them and go out and carry on our sound. And so they played these shows playing these songs, you know, being this new band to carry the torch.
It didn't really exist.
So awesome. They made up album titles.
It's a very punk rock kind of thing to do.
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's very creative. So they made up like album titles and like even I think a cover to one of the albums and played like a series of shows while they were in school.
That's awesome. Very cool. Very sheer mag.
So that's kind of some of the interesting things I thought, like what they did when they were in school. So then they finish up a SUNY Purchase, and then they go down to Philadelphia. And they said one of the reasons they chose Philly was it's a lot cheaper than New York.
So it's true. That's a fact.
Yeah. And so they kind of all lived in the same building and remained friends, but they were doing different projects, a variety of different bands and sounds, until finally they listened to a demo that Kyle and Hart put together of like Kyle's riffs on an 8-track recorder, like down in the basement. Some of those songs went to some of those early EPs. They asked the Matt and the singer to put some lyrics together.
Oh wow!
And that kind of formed the band.
Very cool. That was the genesis.
Another fun fact I saw about them was that, in addition to not only being on the Coachella 16 stage, they did a video, or somebody put a video up of them playing at a wedding here in North Carolina, one of their friends' weddings, doing Shania Twain's Feel Like a Woman.
Oh, wow.
And they nail it.
I bet that was great. I'm going to have to look that up after this.
That's kind of the story behind Sheer Mag and how they came to create this album.
And this was their debut album, so that's awesome.
It's their debut album.
And that's the perfect seg, so I'll take the other one. So another debut album is what you gave me, Donald Fagen's album, The Night Fly. So Donald Fagen, for our listeners out there who don't know, was basically one of the two main guys that started Steely Dan. Major player in the 70s. Asia is still like, I love that. I mean,
it's brilliant.
Peg, like that
Katie
whole,
Lied.
Yeah, love it, love it.
You could just name the hits.
Right, so this was Donald Fagen's debut studio album after Steely Dan kind of broke up in 1981. Yeah. So this was the first thing he did ever without Walter Becker, who Walter Becker was kind of the other half of the brainchild behind Steely Dan with Donald Fagen. The one thing I love about this album is even if you didn't know that he had Steely Dan ties, you listen to it and you immediately hear Steely Dan on just about every single track. Like, there's so many, like, not like every single song sounds like Steely Dan, but there's moments where you're like, oh yeah, that's a Steely Dan lick, or that's a Steely Dan sound, things like that.
Definitely the production is Steely Dan. The fact that a lot of the same musicians.
Yeah, so that's another great point. It's the same producer, same engineer. So Gary Katz was the producer. Roger Nichols was the engineer. These are the same two dudes that worked on a ton of the Steely Dan albums, especially the later ones, like Asia and Gaucho, I think was another one. Yeah. So these guys were the ones that, with Donald Fagen, were starting to branch out into more digital recordings. They were starting to really expand what you could do when it comes to recording and producing a record. And Nightfly was, it wasn't like this was the end result of all these years, but this was a stepping stone on the path to where recordings eventually became. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As far as digital and everything you could do with computers. This was released in October 1982. Went platinum in the US and the UK, had two top 40 hits, IGY, New Frontier were the two tracks that were top 40, was nominated for 7 Grammys, including Album of the Year and Best Engineered Recording. Wall Street Journal in 2007 said it was one of pop music's sneakiest masterpieces, and that's about as good as you could put it. Because this album, like it just sneaks into, after the years, you all of a sudden realize it's one of the kind of the greatest things that's been done, especially from like a recording and a sound standpoint, you know? Mm-hmm. One of the songs, IGY, is still used every single time a sound engineer is trying to test like front of house speakers. And that is so cool to me because when you listen to it, you can get that sense from how they use different instruments and what they're using. If you're wearing headphones, like how you can hear it coming in and out of left and right, like you can really get that sense. And in 1982, these things weren't, they were maybe being talked about. They sure as heck weren't being done.
Yeah, and you know, in 1982, it was interesting because I remember like reading a lot about digital technology coming into sound, and knowing that also, you know, digital technology was going to come in other places. That was a cool fact I remember about this album, was that it was the first digitally mastered album of the day using, you know, all this new digital equipment.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this was like really the earliest example of that fully digital recording as far as popular music goes. It took 8 months for them to record it between studios in New York City and LA. 31 total musicians are credited on the album. So just the kind of difficult nature behind this, they were using, like we've talked about digital technology, 3M was big into this. And it was so difficult because they were down to using, like they would get Donald Fagen to sing so many takes of a certain song, and they would listen to every single line, and they would choose the best version of each line from each recording and make the best version of the song. Yeah. Like they were doing some bananas things that like people just were not doing. Like these engineers were going to the actual 3M studios in Minnesota and taking classes to learn about their technology so they could better engineer this album. Like,
did you see how they had to send the guys into the studio for like 3 days just to get the tracks to line up right and
just to get it to work out. Yeah, it's crazy.
They just send in the field team.
The lengths they went to get this is really crazy, and we'll talk more about that. But another thing that I thought was really neat about this is with everything Steely Dan did, it was never autobiographical. It was very rock and roll kind of thing. Not necessarily like rock and roll, but they were singing with another narrative that wasn't based off of their lives.
They were more trying to capture the sign of the times.
A feeling. Exactly. And so this, like with Nightfly, Donald Fagen's incredibly autobiographical. I think he even said like almost unintentionally or something, like it was so autobiographical, it was too much almost. Really showed a lot of what he felt growing up in suburban, like late 50s, early 60s. The crazy thing was, after this, he said he felt personally that he exposed almost too much of himself, and he became like reclusive. And to this day, he says he still never listened to this album
all the way through. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he's still never done it, and it mentally just messed him up. And there's another thing, like when they released it, the versions that they released were, some of them, the recordings were kind of messed up, so people were having bad experiences, and so then he becomes even more self-conscious. It was like a snowballing effect. And
again, well, and they're such perfectionists.
And that was like one of the big things why Steely Dan broke up, was because they were overly perfectionist dudes.
They were, you know, I remember it was like Steely Dan and Alan Parsons. These were these fantastic bands made up of all these great musicians that had played with everybody from the Beatles on down.
Right.
But you never were going to see them live because it was this collection of studio musicians.
Which is what the Beatles did, right? Like they become like, because you realize that what you do for the crowd when you're a perfectionist isn't what you feel proud of. And you, again, you want to be in the studio and to
perfect
it. Don't
forget, though, the Beatles at Let It Be go up to the rooftop.
Hey, look, I'm a Rolling Stones guy, and they're still touring, bro.
They had to get out there and play last time for the people.
And so he never supported this album.
No, he never did that.
So that's the thing. Like, this album is a really cool spot when it comes to one of music's greatest artists in that era, Donald Fagen, and where he was after Steely Dan and personally. And EQ Magazine recently said this is considered a top 10 best recorded albums of all time, up there with Sgt. Pepper's and Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys. So let that kind of resonate a little bit. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with one of our newest segments, The Good, the Bad, and the Boogie. So just get your popcorn ready, stand up, walk around, and we'll be right back. All right, and we're back. Segment 3, another one of our new segments. So I'll introduce the segment a little bit here, and then we'll hand it off. This segment is called The Good, the Bad, and the Boogie. So what we're going to do, as opposed to reviewing every song on the album, is we're going to give songs that we feel are good, whatever that means to us for that album, songs that we feel are bad, whatever we feel are bad. Of course, bad can be a wild definition anytime. And then things that we feel are boogie. It doesn't necessarily mean that it makes us dance. Maybe it makes us feel something. It doesn't have to be a song. Maybe it's the album art. Maybe it's a certain musician that played on a certain song. It can be anything. But whatever that randomly odd, awesome feeling that you feel that's a little different, that's the boogie. And that's what we're going to give on each album. So, with that said, Brian, give us your good, bad, and the boogie for Sheer Mag's Need to Feel Your Love album.
All right, so The Good, I just really like this album a lot.
Just a good album.
There was a lot of good. I forgot to mention earlier that I thought there was another good quote from Pitchfork's review that says this album plays like a Dazed and Confused soundtrack.
It definitely does.
But it's a little heavier, though.
A little better, though,
which and it's a little bit like faster at times, which is kind of cool. I like the airplane navigating through the dark, stormy skies and the light break on the album cover. It's kind of, again, goes with a little bit of kind of the retro feel, but it's not like overly retro.
I knew you loved the album cover. I knew it.
And then the singer, you know, she's got this punk rock voice, but she's got some good pipes. But her attitude really comes through and brings their sound together.
Oh, yeah. And it's so noticeable, especially like, her voice is great. The effect adds so much, but at the root of it is just the high quality of her vocals.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, I love her vocals. Really like this band. The guitars, the riffs, comes together really nicely. So another good note I saw is like, you know, you could play all day long of Name the Influence with this band, but, you know, you can do that with any band to a certain extent. And to me, just having the fact that they've taken a lot of those really cool bands from that time period and brought that into their sound and then made it their own is what I think is awesome.
Yeah, for sure. And it's so noticeable when you listen to them.
So the good songs that I really liked, the first one, the opening track off the album, Meet Me in the Street, is great. And it's got this kind of rebellion attitude. It kind of reminds me a bit of like The Runaways and Joan Jett.
Or like The Warriors.
A little bit of
how about the movie The Warriors?
Yeah, right? Yeah, like The Warriors and like the white noise and the crowd, almost like AC/DC, like a rock anthem and all that.
You ready to go fight in the streets, man?
Yeah, yeah. Reading about the lyrics and how they came about it, based off some of the present day dissatisfaction with the election, I can kind of get it, so I really liked it.
Let's listen to it a little bit.
Smoking haze in the air, to the east of the river.
We're going to get our kicks. Bottles and bricks. Meet me in the street.
Aggressive.
Very aggressive.
But I like it.
Love it.
Like it. Poetically aggressive.
Poetically aggressive.
There you go.
And then I felt like they kind of carried some of that into other songs, but had a little bit more of, I don't know, fun with them. Like Rank and File I like a little bit better. It's kind of got that 50s Ramones rock sound to it.
Sure.
But still kind of has that punk edge.
Right. Nice. Love the track.
Yeah, I just love that bass and how it just kind of, it comes together again. It just...
It's hard not to fist pump, man. Hard not to fist pump.
You know, that's one of the things I wrote in here that this, well, the next song I'm going to talk about is a song that I wrote. It's a fist in the air song.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
So the next song I want to talk about is Turn It Up, which was probably my favorite song here. The guitar hooks and it's just spot on with the vocals, too. But it's like, yeah, it's got a little bit metal overtones to it. It's like a bit of a punk anthem. To me, it's hard not to just like want to just jam out to it a bit.
You really pump that fist, man.
It's a fist pumping song.
Let's pump
fist
our,
in the air.
Let's pump our fist. Let's pump them.
Really like that song. It's hard not to just get pumped up.
Yeah, fit, my fist is still pumping. I'm trying to get it under control, but it's still pumping, man. Still pumping.
The other thing I thought was really interesting is then they kind of tone it down on two songs. The first one is kind of Milk and Honey. It's a lot slower. It has, again, to me, an almost like an REM alternative rock 80s sound.
Nice, yeah.
To it, it's got a little bit of twang mixed in with that. That makes it, you know, totally different. And the second one is the Goodbye to Sophie Scholl, who was this activist who the Nazis executed in 1943, part of the White Rose activists.
Wow, okay.
So a whole other story behind there.
Yeah. A little history lesson.
A lot of history lessons. I have to admit, in researching this band and the album, there was a lot of good kind of stories behind him. They were very interesting. Making up the band.
Sure, yeah.
Doing these different kind of experimental things to find what they wanted to do and kind of throwing a middle finger up to, like, what's expected to do. So it's very refreshing to see a band that's really kind of carrying that punk rock attitude, but at the same time, not just getting up there playing fast and doing their own thing. Yeah.
They're taking an attitude and still playing their own music. Yeah.
So that wraps up the good. The bad, I didn't have a lot of bad on this. Really, the only one, like, Fan the Flames was, like, one of those songs where the mix is, like, so raw. It just, I don't know, a bit coarse.
You just didn't feel it. You weren't feeling it.
You still kind of feel the emotion and all that, but at some point, it just...
Well, just because it's a bad doesn't mean you think it's a bad song.
No, I don't. In fact, right. It's just where, like, the mix was, like, a little too raw.
Right.
And, you know, I think on her vocals where she's being a little bit more soulful, they still have that very, you know, this whole lo-fi approach.
Right.
That you don't really hear how good her voice is or might be through a little bit cleaner recording. That's the whole sound they want, and I like it. I like lo-fi because it's not as over-polished and over-produced and all that. So that's my bad. Again, very, very minimal.
Must have been a good album.
It's a great album. My boogie is... two things. I liked kind of the strong protest in their songs and lyrics and kind of the angst. You know, that's real. If you're going to go for like that, if you're going to throw punk and hardcore in your name, that kind of goes with the territory. And then, you know, and it doesn't seem fake. It seems very genuine.
Very genuine. Authentic. You know what I mean?
Very authentic.
Their sound is very authentic. They're not trying to be anything but what they want to sound like.
Yeah. And they're not trying to. Yeah, exactly. And that's like the whole forget being what everybody thinks we should be.
Right.
And then my other boogie was riffs, and more riffs. The guitar riffs are awesome.
That's the thing. Like, it's hard not to initially not get hung up, but it's hard not to initially really hang your hat on her vocals and the way that they project her vocals. But what to me makes that band amazing is behind her incredible vocals is a band that's just killing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like crushing it.
Yeah, like the riffs and the beats, and they all go together in this like attitude driven, like musical Nirvana kind of area where like if you like any kind of music with aggression or some kind of attitude, some kind of middle finger, Sheer Mag does it in a way that you probably haven't heard before, and it's kind of refreshing to hear this take on kind of an attitude-driven music, which a lot of people like.
They're not scared.
They love to do what they do.
And they seem to have fun with it, and I think that's where it mixes up well. Like, you've got these songs of protest and anger, but at the same time, they're jamming out and having a good time.
Having a great time, yeah, for sure.
So that's the good and bad, the boogie.
Good and bad, the boogie. On Sheer Mag. Need to feel your love.
Need
all right,
to feel your love.
We'll switch it over now. We'll do the good and bad and the boogie for Donald Fagen's album, The Nightfly. We'll hop right into it. So the good for me was just good songs that had... So I mentioned it earlier, this album has so many shades of Steely Dan, but it's not dominated by that Steely Dan sound. It's like if Steely Dan went super jazzy, but in like a smoky jazz club kind of sound. You get a lot of that. So my good is these great songs that you get that have that Steely Dan sound, but they're not Steely Dan songs. They're just daggone good songs. So we've got a couple of them. New Frontier is going to be the first one we're going to listen to. This is track number 5 on the album. It's about... So one of the things I love about this album, and this was one of the singles on the album, this is one of their, this is one of the top 40 hits that they had, that came off the album, but it's about a teenager hitting it off with his girlfriend, young girlfriend, and then he's trying to talk her into coming and hanging out at his family's bomb shelter.
The bomb shelter. So it's all decked out.
All decked out bomb shelter. So that was another, like, super cool thing, is this is a very autobiographical album to where he takes a lot of his ideas from childhood and kind of, you know, projects them and ties them into all these different songs. And that's what, these stories that you get in these songs are so cool. And this is one that is great. The music, though, alone makes this song incredible. Track 5, New Frontier.
You'll love this, the way you mentioned that song. The video for this is just that. It's this young actor and a girl in like a poodle dress and 50s and all that.
Sure.
And it's shot in like black and white 50s style. And that's just it. Like, he's trying to mack with her and stuff, and they're in this tiny little
bomb shelter. It's so perfect, so perfect. Yeah, and I love the, like, the pop right at the start of it, specifically with the bass line. There's a lot of, like, you listen to that song, you can sense the Steely Dan-ness there. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Very, very heavy on the Steely Dan sound. But love the bass line. It just, it has that feeling of, like, you want to be rolling with your boys in a convertible with the top down on the strip at the beach. You know what I mean? Like, that's, that, I get that feeling when I listen to that song. But love the track. New Frontier, track number 5. That's my first good. My second good is track number 6. So right after that, it's called The Nightfly, and that's the name of the album. This song, super fun song. That's, it's about a radio DJ. So one of the things Donald Fagen said he loved is, as a kid, listening to these late night radio DJs. There's a lot of names, but specifically like that jazz late night DJ, because he said the great ones were like that cool uncle you wish you had, that was just so like cool and calm but forthright, you know, like he, but he knew everything. Like, that was what he wanted to kind of be in this song, or that's what this song should be about. And so, love this song. The sound, again, super fun song. A lot of some shades of Steely Dan, but it's not at all a dominating part of the song. Like, it's almost kind of subtle. You also get, so this song is supposed to be about like that late night jazz DJ, right, in a smoky room. Listen to this song and tell me you don't feel that you're sitting in a smoky room. The way that the song kind of, I don't think it's the volume, but the way that they all kind of play almost a half a step quieter than you normally would, gives it a level, it's not creepy, but it's a level of like smokiness, we'll say that. And it's not, again, it's not dominating, but it's present. So
the vocals definitely sound a lot like Steely Dan, but that's because he's narrating this guy's story.
And because he is Steely Dan.
Well, and he was the lead singer. But
right.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's like he's telling the whole story of this Nightfly guy, and he paints a really good picture of this guy sitting out just spinning jazz records.
Yeah. And again, like with that, like the vocals, but the music gives you that smoky feel. And it's rare that music can make you smell or feel something as well as this song does. So track 6, The Nightfly. Thank you.
strength for kind. I wait all night for calls like these.
Great title track, love the Nightfly, and that actually finishes up my good. So we'll hop down to the bad. Now my bad again. I feel like we're gonna have to say this every single time we do this segment. But when I say bad, it doesn't mean that I didn't like the song or I thought the song was bad. It's just something about it made me laugh and think it was cheesy or think, well, for whatever reason, right?
It's not bad means good.
Exactly. Yeah. Or maybe that does. You know, we'll see when that
open to interpretation.
When that moment comes, we'll deal with it. But right now, that's not the moment. My bad, I actually have two tracks, and both tracks are good tracks. Like, I like both tracks. But the reason why I'm putting them as bad is because these two tracks have this, like, super cheesy sound to them that we're going to play both of them. You tell me, as listeners, both of them don't sound like something off of a freaking Christmas album. That's all I hear, dude. That's all I hear in these two tracks. It's either I'm in some, like, Holiday Inn lobby and I got music playing, or I'm listening to some Christmas album I've never even heard of the people doing, and these are these songs. And I couldn't get it out. Again, I will say this. I like both of these songs. Really like both of these songs. The first one we'll play, Maxine, track number 4, is a very Steely Dan sound. But you tell me, we're going to play a little bit right now, tell me this doesn't sound like Christmas.
Tell us to stop before we've begun. We've got to hold out till graduation. Try to hang on, Maxine.
I understand the Christmas.
You get it?
Reference
again. Not a bad song.
No, it's not a bad song. It's probably the most mellow, or it's definitely the most mellow.
And their
song.
Vocals sound amazing.
The vocals sound good.
Like to Beach me, Boys. It's like, sounds like the Beach Boys.
Yeah, to me, it reminds me of like a smoky club piano singer. But
half the bar,
same time,
half the bar is smoking a cigarette.
Half the bar is smoking a cigarette. But at the same time, he would never have that great of a like three. Fantastic backup singers
sure.
like that. You know, it'd usually just be one guy.
Again, like, it's not a bad song, but it makes me laugh every time I hear it because I can't get out of my head that they're all wearing Santa hats.
See, now every time I hear this, I'm going to think of Christmas.
Santa Claus. They're wearing Santa hats, man.
It's earworm.
All right, so we'll drop down to the second song. The last song I have for my bad is track number 8. It's called Walk Between Raindrops, and it's the same reason. It has a very, like, senior center hotel lobby feel, a Christmas feel. One thing I will say about
hotel
this track...
Lobby.
Yeah, right,
that's
you got
awesome.
Like that. One thing I love about this track is the xylophone. Absolutely murders the xylophone of this track. So we'll play a little bit of this. Track number 8, Walk Between Raindrops.
So funny you mentioned this song. So this song, my roommate in college played drums.
It's a great drum track,
and he still plays drums.
It really is.
Yeah, he's still a drummer. Mike Simmons plays in the Reading, PA area. If you're up
shout
there.
Out Mike, friend of the pod.
So anyway, he used to actually put his headphones on and jam out to this, and because he loved the percussion part of it.
Oh, it's a fun drum. Yeah. Again, tell me you don't feel Christmas when you listen to that.
I never thought of it that way, but
I do like the hotel
lobby is a better adjective.
And again, when I say that, I don't mean it as a bad thing, but if look, this is the new segment.
It does have that feel.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing. He was trying to capture this cool 50s jazz.
Oh, for sure.
You know, smoothness.
And he did, 100%. Yeah. Either way, we're going to hop down now to my boogie. I got a couple pieces of my boogie this time. We're going to start off. First part of my boogie is track number one, IGY. Now, IGY stands for something. Stands for International Geophysical Year, which was July 1957 through December of 1958. Now, this was an international science project that was focused on, like, projects that were really focused on advancing the future, right? So, and, like, improving the world. Solar panels, permanent space stations, full-body spandex suits, like, super crazy things. And so if you listen to the lyrics on IGY, you get that sense that they're talking about like a bright future, but it's also kind of satirical. So you got kind of that element with the lyrics. What I love about this track is the audio part of it. So yeah. It's considered the free bird, Lynyrd Skynyrd song, considered the free bird of pro audio. Just about every single like sound engineer that's trying to get front of house speakers like set as far as like their response rate when you start playing music and how the speakers actually are pushing it back as far as that response rate goes, they almost always use IGY because when you listen to it, you can tell that you got a lot of different sounds running at different levels to different times, a lot of different things going on. So it's the perfect test of a sound system as far as seeing like how it's going to respond to what you're going to push through it. So I thought that was super, super interesting. So we're going to play a little bit of IGY and just go ahead and think of this as one of the greatest recorded songs of all time.
So you mentioned how this is used for sound systems. When they first built Walnut Creek in 1990, I believe, I went out, they had an open house, and I went out there, and sure enough, they were playing this album.
Oh, wow.
Through the PA. And I have to remember saying to myself, like, that PA sounds fantastic.
There you go. And that's what they were testing.
Yep.
There you go. Proof's in the pudding.
So proved, yeah. Proof point.
There you go.
Walnut Creek.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. I love when we're proved right. Like it never happens.
Psych.
All right, so my second boogie is track number three. The song's called Ruby Baby, and it is simply a boogie song for me because I grew up on this classic 1960s song from the Drifters called Ruby Baby, and that's what this song is, but it's done in a way more jazzy version, and the first time I heard it, it kind of took me back to when I listened to that Faith No More album that you gave me when they sang Easy, right?
Easy,
yeah. Yeah, Easy by the Commodores. So it was the same.
Took you back to your roots.
Well, it's just like when you hear a song and you're not expecting it, and it takes you a couple of seconds, like, is this really what I'm hearing? And then when you realize it is, you feel this kind of feeling of accomplishment because you figured it out, but also nostalgia because there's a reason why you thought of it. And for me, like, I grew up on the 1960s, song by the Drifters called Ruby Baby. Nice. So hearing Donald Fagen do that, that's awesome. So let's listen to a little bit of this.
I've got a girl and Ruby is her name.
Yeah, just classic. And I love his version of it. Like you said, like it starts off with the drums and the hi-hat hitting that.
It's awesome.
It immediately grabs you. We're into the smoky jazz scene. Ruby, Ruby.
When
will you be mine?
Yeah, when will you be mine? So I did not realize it was a cover. I may have maybe read it years ago and forgot.
And it's been covered.
But I don't... I have to go back now and listen to the original because I don't even remember...
It's been covered a few times. Like, the Drifters, I think, were the first one to make it kind of iconic. Okay. But it's been covered a few times.
That's awesome that you listened to it growing up.
There you go. Hey, my dad cut... I cut my teeth on oldies. Motown. Oh, yeah. The Drifters are right in that wheelhouse. So. Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to drop down. So my next boogie, I've got... Two boogie items left. I'm going to save the last one as a song. So we're going to I'll do get to that one last so that we can play this segment out into that song so y'all can listen to that. So I'm going to jump now to my third boogie item is, you'll appreciate this, actually the album art. So think back to Donald Fagen had never really done anything autobiographical, but this album was, and it was like very like personally kind of opening. Like he really opened himself up a lot to this. This album art, the front album art, the main album art, is him. It's actually him with like a crew cut, and he looks like an old-time DJ who's like smoking a cigarette, and there's like a record play, and there's like a clock in the background or whatever. It's a very cool kind of black and white picture. Really kind of sums up that what you would think of as a late 1950s jazz DJ kind of thing. And he said he just wanted it, he didn't want it to be anybody specific, didn't want it to be him, he just wanted it to represent that idea, right? So he nailed that. But what I love about it is like all the different elements. So the time on the clock is like 4:09, I think. They use that in advertising. And one of the lines in The Night Fly says, after the time of 4:09s, where everything comes alive. Like all these things like that. And then he's smoking the King Chesterfield cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And the album that he's spinning is his favorite album, like his personal favorite album ever. It's a 1958 jazz album by Sonny Rollins and the Contemporary Leaders. It was like a kind of like a compilation. Oh, yeah. And his one of his favorite albums, and that's on there. And I just thought it was so cool that this is this guy that never showed any side of himself, but he just almost using Easter eggs, kind of like he's showing little parts of himself, and it was so neat to me. Another thing, like not only the front but the back. So the back of the album was, it's a black and white picture of a house, and you kind of see the side of the house, but there's only one window at the top stairs, and it's lit, and there's light coming out of it. And he wanted that to kind of represent what he and every other kind of kid was at that time, who's sitting there by that radio late at night, listening to the music, because that was his lifeline. And he said at one point in his life, the real world didn't make sense to him. The only thing that made sense to him in his entire life was the world of jazz. And so you think about that and how this was the first autobiographical moment of his musical career, and how that back picture was almost like him as a kid. And he said something. He said, you know, I watched E.T. for the first time, and I realized that my E.T., my alien sitting in the corner, my otherworldly being, were all my Thelonious Monk albums, because I realized that was out of this world.
That's awesome.
And it's just, those are the moments that's what makes geniuses like Donald Fagen. And that's why I love that he so accurately, but at the same time sneakily, put all this truth about himself in the album cover and back without most people even knowing. You know what I mean?
Because it looks so simple, because it looks so very clean and that 50s look.
And if you think like, oh, he's doing something about the night fly, it's about a DJ, and then you see that and you stop there. You don't research it anymore. But if you research a little bit more, you realize that every single detail in those pictures was thought out. And that's super cool.
I just remember looking at it and like the Chesterfield Kings and like the call letters and stuff like that. And just, this is a really cool shot of him as this old school jazz DJ. Listening to that album the first time, I felt it was a bit autobiographical and nostalgic. You know, IGY was interesting because he has a bit of perspective on it, in that pushing this out in 82, all these great things they told him, and I think New Frontier does as well, maybe they weren't turned out as great as they all
exactly, but as far as the future goes.
But yeah, that's awesome about the details. Now I look at it in a whole different way.
Exactly. And that's the thing I think is so neat is he's showing so much without most people realizing it. And that's what I think, to me, that feeling that I got learning more and more about what he was doing with the album art and the back art was that, to me, that feeling I got, that's the boogie.
There you go.
That's the boogie. All right, so my last boogie point is track number 7, and it is called The Goodbye Look. And we're not even going to play much of this, probably just about 30 seconds, because the main reason is the bossa nova sound that he has comes out of left field, number one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess he had been doing the jazzy thing, so it's not that wild that he would do this, but they do it so well. Like Latin jazz to me. Dizzy Gillespie, Fela Kuti, Ginger Baker, whenever he was doing his stuff with... the Jet Planes or whatever it was, like when he was playing with Fela Kuti, like that Latin jazz, that polyrhythmic, it is just the dirty dirt. I love it. And so they don't really dive into it that much, but I love that he dabbled a little bit with that kind of Caribbean bossa nova sound. So we're going to listen to a little bit of this as we fade out. So this is going to be the end of this segment, and then we'll go into our fourth segment questions. But this track is number 7. It's called The Goodbye Look. And we're back. Segment number 4 of episode 13. Again, one of our new segments, we very simply call it questions. What that means is each one of us comes up with a question that is somehow based off of the album that was swapped to us. Now, that's as much as I'm going to give you. I feel like our examples and what we actually do with that should give the context that they need, because we have smart listeners. With that said, Brian, why don't you go ahead and give me your question from Sheer Mag's album, Need to Feel Your Love.
My question is, can they follow this up? It's just such a strong debut album that you've got like one of two scenarios. Like, you followed up with another just kick-ass album.
Yeah,
you know, sophomore effort. But you have to change it. It can't just be the same album again to a certain extent.
So I don't disagree with that, but I also don't think that you can just, like... You know, you can't change what you do every single time. One thing that makes me feel confident that they will continue to come out with good stuff is the fact that this album, like their first, LP, it, like, though it's great, like they had come out with multiple, like, shorter, I guess kind of like, they were EPs because they were short, but they were like compilation of just single.
Yeah.
And so what makes me feel confident is that they've been coming out with good stuff from the beginning. And it's just, it's been in that shorter kind of single EP format, and now they're just finally getting to the LP. So I do get that when you're playing in with a kind of a style or a genre that's not quite as wide, it's a little limiting. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I get that there's not much new stuff that you can do, but the fact that they've been built off of what they've been doing, I have total confidence that they'll continue doing the good stuff.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear their successive releases. Maybe a future album swap.
So yeah, maybe. There you
maybe
go.
I'll give you that.
Maybe you'll get... Oh, man, this is beautiful. Beautiful moments here. Okay, cool. So I will now take the question segment. So my question for you is... So obviously this, you know, the name of the album is The Night Flies. It's kind of based on this idea of a late night DJ, jazz DJ, right? So my question for you is... when, as like what time, what era, and what genre or what kind of radio station would you want to be a DJ like at? Where you would be a DJ, what time and what kind of radio station would you be at? Would you be a DJ if you could actually make that historical pick? Like if you could drop yourself in that moment. Wow. And also, a little sub question, what would your DJ name be?
Oh, wow. That is loaded up. So I'd probably say right around the Dazed and Confused time, 1977-78.
Little rock and roll station.
Rock and roll, you know, you had, you know, early punk was coming out. Not selling out the disco at all. Listening to the true R&B that was part of disco and appreciating that. You know, Zeppelin was really kind of at their apex at that point. So you had epic rock band.
What was your name?
And then, you know, like, ELO was really good in 1978, even though they had a few kind of disco-esque sounds. Sure. So, you know, I would have been heavy on the Jeff Lynne and the ELO.
Gotta love it, man. All right, DJ Brian, what would the name be?
DJ Brian. Well,
what would the handle be?
So I can tell you that if it was in the 80s, I have a rap name I would have used, which would have been Slack D, but in 1978, you wouldn't have gone on the radio as Slack D.
Yeah, probably wouldn't have flown as well.
It wouldn't have flown. It was, you know, the time-space continuum would have
wouldn't have worked.
Blown up right there. But it's probably been something like really awful and cheesy coming out of like the mid to late 70s, you know, like Rick Morning or something like that. Who knows?
All right, DJ...
Brick Danger.
DJ Brick Danger over here. Awesome. All right, so is that going to be your name? DJ Brick Danger.
It's tough because my favorite like names of that time period are like the artist names, Bon Scott and Robert Plant.
So you're just going to be DJ Brian McDonald.
Well, I don't know if I'd want... I definitely didn't like my name in the 70s because of the whole McDonald's hamburger chain and crap like that. Mm-hmm. Now I'm fine with it. I could care less. Yeah, it'd be tough. I don't know. Maybe like Drew Spinner or something.
DJ Drew Spinner. I don't hate it. That's not bad. All right. Well, that's your answer. All right, DJ Drew Spinner. I think that concludes our... question segment. So myself and DJ Drew Spinner are going to go talk about our scores. We're going to come back with our final segment, which is when we typically do. We'll give a quick review summary, a score, and then we're going to be out of here. Check out the full albums for each episode at albumswap.net. All right, final segment, segment 5, episode 13. We're going to wrap it up. This is a segment we've done every single time since we started. We do a quick review. We give it a score between 1 and 10. Decimal points are encouraged. Brian always goes over the top and gives us hundredths, whatever. Brian, go ahead and score your album.
Sheer Mag, Need to Feel Your Love. Like I said, I really love this album. I gave it a solid 8.5. Could be a 9 as I listen to it a little bit more. But nonetheless, just great. Love the whole punk mixed in with a little bit of classic rock, the riffs, just jamming it all out.
Right up your alley. I knew you'd like that.
Yeah, strong. Strong to very strong.
Strong 8.5. Heavy recommended, huh?
Yeah, I like it.
Perfect. Okay, so my turn. You gave me Donald Fagen's album, The Nightfly, one of the main guys in Steely Dan. I gave it a very... strong 8.71, and I gave it the extra hundredth because I know you love this album, and so I also think that this album is one that like you listen to a couple of times. Every single time you listen to it, you like it for a different reason, but there is this kind of subtle layer of genius that's present throughout the entire time, every single time you listen to it, and it can't be discounted, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
so
it's brilliant.
For that reason, I'm even going to 100th. I never do it, but as a tip of the cap to you, Donald Fagen's 1982 release, The Nightfly, I'll give it an 8.71.
Now, did you notice I didn't... Actually, I was just going to say 8, but I felt that wasn't giving it justice. I was going to get rid of decimals altogether.
Well, that's dumb. See, I mean, so it's like figure
did you notice I only went... So last week, I didn't have any... decimal point, and this week I only had one.
Well, decimal points are important. You can go to the hundreds. I'm saying, like, tenths are important. It's just like figure skating. They don't round it off. All right. We'll have this discussion later. Listeners, thanks for listening to us. We'll be back next time with episode 14. Tune in.
Adios.
You have been listening to Album Swap. Visit albumswap.net for all the latest episodes.